only the target they are intended for. In other words, just like the American government was very proud of their atom bomb, and they dropped it in Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and some places like that. And the idea was to kill soldiers, but when you drop it on a city, you know, there are some soldiers there and there are some military camps, but there's no discrimination with such a bomb. Women, children, anyone, it just destroys everything in sight. There's no control. However, Brahmastra, thousands, hundreds of times, thousands of times more ferocious than the atom bomb, has such accuracy. It can enter into the womb of a woman, kill a child without even causing any pain to the woman physically. That's because these mantras that created these were from a very, very advanced civilization. So one may ask a simple question. Krishna was so favorable to the Pandavas. He saved the five Pandavas in every situation. Whether they were in the house of lack, whether they were given poison, whether they were outnumbered, 11 Akshohinis to the 18 Akshohini division of soldiers in the Battle of Kurukshetra, 11 and 7, I'm sorry. Whatever situation, the Pandavas were always protected and saved. And herein, Maharaj Parikshit is so miraculously saved by Krishna. So why did Krishna not protect Abhimanyu? He had that power. During the battle of Kurukshetra, Abhimanyu was a child. He was only about 16 years old. You mothers who have a child 16 years old, you would be very fearful of him going into a battlefield against Bhishma and Drona and all these big sharks of the Kurus, Jayadratha, Duryodhana, Karna. Abhimanyu, he was the son of Arjuna, so dear to Krishna. And Arjuna and the Pandavas loved him more than their own lives. In those days, it wasn't just the father that loved the son. It was joint family. Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they loved Abhimanyu as much as Arjuna. He was like their own child. He was the senior most of the next generation of the Pandavas. Therefore, it was quite obvious he was going to be the next king. How much they favored, how much they loved him. And yet, during that great battle, when the Kurus created a particular formation that was so powerful, it was destroying the entire Pandava army. And Arjuna was very strategically distracted by the Kurus to a very, very far distant place on the battlefield where he was not accessible. He was in the middle of fighting so many armies. So an emergency decision had to be made. That's the way this world is. Sometimes there's a decision where you just wish you could just go back to your office and sit and talk to all your friends and family members and ministers and managers and god brothers and god sisters and everyone else and come to a very, very logical, gradual decision. But sometimes decisions have to be made immediately, otherwise everything is finished. So this decision was, if within a matter of seconds, if we do not do something about this formation that the Kurus have done, we're going to lose the war. That was the power of this formation. Even to try to find Arjuna in that amount of time, they would have had such casualties that they would have been finished. So what to do? It was a matter of life and death. And more important than that, it was a matter of fulfilling Krishna's desire. Krishna sent us into this battlefield to fight this war. We're doing it for Him. We cannot lose. So an instant decision had to be made. Abhimanyu was the only person besides Arjuna who knew the power, the secret power of penetrating that particular formation. But he did not have the proper education how to get out of it. So this is a great dilemma. What if he gets in but he can't get out? It's very dangerous, but at the same time he's the only one who can get in. So the Pandavas had to decide immediately. And they couldn't even consult his father, Arjuna, or Krishna, who was with Arjuna. So immediately Yudhisthira made the decision with a heavy heart. He said, Abhimanyu, please do it. Our service to Krishna is completely depending on you. Abhimanyu was happy to do it. He didn't care life or death. He just wanted to serve. Even though there was such a large risk involved of his life, he didn't mind. Not only a risk of his life, but he had his wife, Uttara, who happened to be pregnant with his own child, and his mother, Subhadra, who loved him so dearly. One would naturally think, what about my child in the womb? And what about my wife? And what about my mother? And what about me? These are considerations people have in life at times, for most people at all times. But Abhimanyu didn't consider. My service, Yudhisthira Maharaj, you are Krishna's representative. My service to you is the only consideration. If it is your desire that I risk my life, I will go without hesitation. In fact, he was enlivened. He was jubilant to go, thinking, what wonderful service. To do this service for Krishna, whether I live or die, it is glorious. So Yudhisthira and Bhima, they arranged that the most powerful warriors of the Pandavas would be right behind him. And after he penetrates, they would go in with him. Then he would be protected. So Abhimanyu, with great enthusiasm, he just charged into that military phalanx of the Kurus, charged into it, and there was no power that could stop him. And he penetrated right into it and destroyed the formation. It could no longer be harmful to anyone after he penetrated it. But the problem is, the Kurus, very cleverly, immediately after he penetrated, they closed it so that no one else could get in. And Bhima and all the other soldiers, they were trying to get in. Let me in. They couldn't get in. It was impossible. And meanwhile, Abhimanyu saw that he was alone with all the greatest, most powerful Maharathis in the whole planet Earth. And they were all against him. It was a very unfair, unethical, sinful activity performed by the Kurus. Because the Kshatriya code is that a person should fight a person who is of equal stature with the same weapons so that it's a fair fight. Abhimanyu was a Maharathi, but there was, I believe, 7 or 8 Maharathis against him. And they were all fighting against him simultaneously. And he was fighting so incredibly heroically like nobody had ever seen, that all of these Maharathis were just praising him and glorifying him for being such a brave and such a skilled warrior. But ultimately, because there were so many against him, and there was a whole army surrounding, it was him against the entire Kuru army, Hare Krishna, he became tired. He was fighting and fighting. As long as he had his strength, no one could defeat him. In fact, he was actually defeating them. But after a long time, he was becoming tired. And then they broke his bow, and then they broke his club, and ultimately they killed him. And when there was this roar in the Kuru army, a massive roar, a victory, and the Pandavas heard it, they understood what had happened. Yudhisthira Maharaja's heart just broke into millions of pieces, as did Bhima. How are we going to explain this to Arjuna? How are we going to explain this to Subhadra? What to speak of Uttara, a simple and humble pregnant woman who is his wife? The pain was extending in so many directions. It was unbearable. Just a few days ago, I was listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada, where this Indian professor was talking to Srila Prabhupada in Europe. I believe it was in Europe or America. And he was saying that, Swamiji, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that you should not lament for those who are living or dead. So I want to know why Arjuna lamented when he heard that his son Abhimanyu was killed. First I'll tell the story, then I'll tell Srila Prabhupada's answer, with your permission. That evening, Arjuna was at a whole other side of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. For those of you who go to Kurukshetra, you know this battlefield is hundreds and hundreds of miles. It's not just like a football stadium that... It's very big. Practically the whole state of Haryana was the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So... When Arjuna came back, he was actually victorious in that day's battle. So he was very happy. Krishna arranges things in such a way. Happiness and then distress. If you're kind of miserable and you get bad news, it's like, oh. But if you're blissful and then you get bad news, the shock is too much. So Arjuna was just victorious today. It was a battle that they were trying to win for a long time, and he was coming back as the conqueror. And when he came back in the evening, because during the battles of those days, after the sunset, no one would fight. They would, in fact, they would sometimes be friends with each other. Because the fighting was their service. Sometimes they didn't even have bad feelings. Sometimes they were good friends, but they had to fight because it was their service. So what happened is, Arjuna returned, and no one could even look at him. Everyone was looking at the ground. And Arjuna was, I won! I won the war! And everyone, why are you not looking at me? And every night when I come in from the battlefield, I'm greeted by my most beloved son, Abhimanyu. Every time I come in from the battlefield, he comes here to greet me with his love and warm smile. Where is Abhimanyu? And why will none of you look at me in the face? Arjuna could understand by his own intelligence what has happened. And Yudhisthira could not speak. He had no power to tell this news to Arjuna. But ultimately, the truth was revealed. How Abhimanyu so heroically, as the true son of Arjuna, gave his life in the most heroic way. Arjuna was simultaneously broken-hearted, weeping, and angry. As a father, he was a completely broken man with a broken heart. But as a Kshatriya, he was furious and ready to conquer the world to bring justice to this sin. Anyways, he vowed, if he does not kill Jayadratha, who was actually behind this whole plot to kill Abhimanyu, if he did not kill Jayadratha by sunset the next day, Arjuna said, I will enter into fire. Meanwhile, this professor asked Srila Prabhupada, we're not the bodies. We're not supposed to lament for the living or the dead. Asochananvasochastvam pragyavadamshtabhashate. Bhagavad Gita says, a learned man does not lament for the living or the dead. He called Arjuna a fool for thinking in these terms at the beginning of Gita. Did Arjuna realize the Gita? If so, why he's lamenting over the death of a body? Why this bodily attachment of son, daughter, wife? So Srila Prabhupada gave a wonderful answer to this question. He explained that it is natural for a father to love his son. That is the nature of a human being. And it's nature of the soul to love who's close to you. And that cannot and should not be disturbed, that nature. But what proved that he was transcendental is even though he had to suffer the separation of his son, he continued his service with full enthusiasm. He would have been materialistic. He would have been a man of the bodily concept if, after suffering the loss of his son, he said to Krishna, I cannot fight anymore. I will not fight anymore. I cannot do my service. I don't have faith in you anymore, Krishna. If you were really such a great soul, why you let my son die? He could have blamed Krishna. He could have had so many excuses to leave that battlefield and lament. But he was willing and ready and determined to go on with his service wholeheartedly, with greater enthusiasm and determination than ever before. This is the symptom of a person who is in transcendental consciousness. Because if you note, at the beginning of Gita, Krishna was telling Arjuna not to lament, not simply in a sentimental way. He did not want that lamentation to disturb the discharge of his duty. Because the Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna on one level to impel him and inspire him to do his duty and fight. And Arjuna's lamentation of the fear of the death of his loved ones was actually causing him to want to leave his service, to leave the battlefield. So the lamentation that Krishna declared to be Maya is not that you feel sorry, but rather that you're willing to leave your service because of a material conception. That makes it material. So it is natural when someone you love, you are in separation from. But if that separation or if any other situation within this world diverts your attention away from your service to Guru and Krishna, that is material consciousness. And that is what Krishna is preaching against in Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada told this professor, the fact that Arjuna was ready to go on with his service with full faith and conviction in Krishna means he was transcendental. Even if he wept and cried piteously due to the death of his son. When the news came to Subhadra, she was just weeping and crying, and so many other ladies and queens had to go and somehow try to pacify her. And after the battle, Uttara, she's a widow. She has this child in her womb. And Ashwatthama, the son of Drona, he was so angry that his father, Dronacharya, was killed by Dhristajumna in a very unfair way. Drona was so ferociously insulted by Bhima that insults are most painful when they're true. If someone speaks lies against you, it might be painful. But when someone says something true against you, and you've done it wrong, it's very painful. The truth has great power. Dronacharya was so strong. Due to Duryodhana's influence, Drona just went all out in this fight. And no one could even look at him, what to speak of fight against him. When he was fighting, no one even tried to fight. They just couldn't even look at him. They were just all being destroyed. Just like if a cyclone comes into a city, everyone just, nobody shoots arrows. Everyone just sees their imminent death. So that is how he was fighting. And the Pandavas understood. And he just went so completely wild in his spontaneous fighting propensities. He just broke all the rules. The sun set and he just couldn't stop. He was in the path of mass destruction. So Bhima actually approached him and understood the truth hurt. The truth is more powerful than any weapons. We cannot stop him with our clubs or our bows or any of our brahmastras. Nothing can stop Drona, but the truth will stop him. And Bhima began to describe how you have done so many bad things. You were there when Draupadi was being stripped naked and you didn't do anything. You were there when the Pandavas, when we were fed the poison, you didn't do anything. So many atrocities were going around. What did you do? Where is your morality? Where is your dharma? And now in this fight, you're a big, big kshatriya, and little people who can't even compete with you, you are just annihilating them without discrimination. Drona understood that everything he was saying was right. And that truth was a flaming arrow that went right to his heart. And then, of course, Krishna told Yudhisthira, we have to stop him. He's attached to his son, his only son, Ashwatthama. If you say he's dead, he won't be able to fight any longer. Yudhisthira said, but he's not dead. Yudhisthira was Dharmaraj. He was such a great personality. His whole life, in his mind, he never considered an immoral thought in his life. What to speak of speaking a lie? He never considered thinking of anything that was not completely pious and religious. How many of you are like that? today a pious person who somehow or other all the sinful, impious, exploitative thoughts in our mind, we just fight against them and we just battle against them and take shelter of Krishna's name, take shelter of virtue, and we don't act on it somehow or other. But Yudhisthira Maharaj was so pure that an impious thought could not come to his mind. So therefore, whatever he said was considered the unargument of truth, could not be challenged. And it is a fact, trust comes through someone with integrity. If a man or a woman with integrity speaks something to you, you know it's true. You have complete faith. If a person who has no real integrity says something to you, then we think, what is he trying to get out of me? What does he mean? Why is he saying? Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I'll have to do some research. I'll have to ask several others. Didn't Srila Prabhupada say in India, when you ask directions from someone, you should ask at least 5 people? That's the integrity of this nation. Just a simple thing is, where is Chopati? Someone will say, oh, straight ahead, straight ahead. Someone else will say, oh, you go to the corner and you turn left and then you turn right and then you turn left and then you go to the cinema house and you go inside and then you... Someone else will tell you, you're going the wrong direction. This happens all the time. I remember one time we were trying to find Radhakanta Prabhu's house in Borivali, and the driver was asking directions. Where is this address? And someone said, this way. So we're going this way. So you're supposed to ask 5 people. We told the driver, ask 5 people. It's Prabhupada's instruction. So we asked the next person. He said, straight ahead. Third person, straight ahead. Fourth person, straight ahead. Fifth person, you're going the wrong way. It's back about 10 blocks that way. So then we're going 10 blocks that way. We ask someone, where is this? They said, straight ahead. We ask the next person, where is it? Straight ahead. Next 4 people said, straight ahead. The 5th person, he said, it's back that way. You're going the wrong way. Anyway, somehow or other we found it. By Krishna's mercy. So people like to talk. Everyone wants to know. But actually, when someone only speaks the truth, then you have faith, you have confidence. And actually, Srila Prabhupada, he said very strongly that this movement must expand and be sustained by love and trust. You cannot have real love without trust. And you cannot have trust unless we're honest with each other. And it's become a big problem amongst devotees that they just speak without really considering the substance and the truth behind it. And one of the reasons is the abuse of Srila Prabhupada's simple formula of transcendental trickery. Srila Prabhupada explained if a baby child is suffering from a disease and is about to die, and the mother wants to give it medicine, and the medicine doesn't taste good, the mother will put the medicine in sugar and give it to the child and say, this is not medicine. This is sweet. If the child knows it's medicine, it will not take it. So the mother says, it is not medicine, it is sweet. So Srila Prabhupada said, is she a liar? No. She may be technically saying something that's not exactly true, but it's to save the life. It's for a higher purpose. So he said, sometimes to get a people to become, to take Krishna consciousness, we may put sugar coating and not say exactly what it is. When we give a person prasad, we may not, for some people we'll say this is prasad, but for a materialistic people, if you say in a Western world to a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim to say this was offered to a deity, this is Krishna's mercy. It was offered to an installed deity. Here's the picture of the deity. It's his remnants. Please take it. They will not take the idol worship. I will not have. So you don't say. I remember sometimes I'd say when I'd be on the streets, I'd say, please take this. And they'd say, but it was cooked by my mother. It will make me feel so good if you take it. Oh, if it was cooked by your mother. Of course, all ladies in the temple are addressed as mother, so I wasn't lying. I may not have taken birth from her womb, but still she's my mother. In fact, it says every woman is mother, except your wife. And I have no wife, so every... So it must be true. So they would take it. Sometimes when distributing books, some little may be there, just to get that person, because otherwise the person's full speed ahead going to hell. We want to somehow or other save them. But Srila Prabhupada very, very carefully explained how to use this transcendental trickery in emergency situations to save a person's life. But somehow devotees, they just took it to too much extremes, that we could say anything if it's for Krishna. But the question is, actually, is it for Krishna? So then devotees started expanding on so many lines and so many ways of dealing with karmis, materialistic people, to somehow or other engage them. You can say anything, you could do anything, it doesn't matter, just so that you get something or give something like that. And that mentality became so much the second nature of a devotee that when they come back to the temple, they start doing the same things amongst each other. Think everything's for Krishna. So I could say anything to my god brother or my god sister or another Vaishnav in order to get what I have to get, in order to achieve what I want to achieve in my service. Sometimes it's for selfish purposes, sometimes it's actually for service. You say anything to someone, even if it's not true, just so that you can get your service done the best way amongst devotees. But what's the result of that? Everybody's looking at everybody, that truth is such a cheap thing. People could say anything for any reason, just for their service or for their own personal interest. Nobody can trust each other anymore. And when the love and trust is not there, then there's tremendous, tremendous damage done to our movement and to our interrelationships. Therefore, amongst devotees, we should be thoroughly honest. We don't have to trick other Vaishnavas. We should be thoroughly straightforward and honest. Rupa Goswami explains the symptom of a devotee is he is simple and straightforward. We must be, if we're actually honest, people understand what this person says is never an exaggeration, it's true. Then there's integrity. Then there's trust. Then people can start taking shelter of each other. This is very important. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, anyone he would speak to with such respect, they accepted what he said because of his integrity. So it is said that when Krishna told Yudhisthira to tell a lie, actually it wasn't a lie, because Krishna is the absolute truth. And whatever Krishna says is the absolute truth. Relative truth is always secondary to absolute truth. So Yudhisthira, for a moment only, he hesitated. And during that hesitation, his chariot, which never touched the ground, fell to the ground. Now, the materialistic interpreters of the Mahabharata say, because he told a lie, his chariot fell. But the Vaishnavas, who understand the transcendental meaning of the Mahabharata, they say because he hesitated to surrender to Krishna immediately. Sarvadharman puritya jamam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of dharma, just surrender to me. Because there was a moment hesitation in that utter surrender, his chariot came to the ground. So Krishna understood his devotee's mind, and an elephant named Ashwatthama happened to be killed on the battlefield. So Krishna said, you just tell Drona that Ashwatthama the elephant has died. But then Krishna, it is said by some commentators that Krishna blew his conch shell at a certain interval. He was like the original editor of audio editor. We have our tape ministries editing things. Yudhisthira said, Drona, Ashwatthama. And then when he said the elephant, Krishna blew the conch shell. Drona, Ashwatthama, is dead. Now Drona knew that Ashwatthama cannot be killed. He was given a benediction by Lord Shiva. He could not be killed. So therefore, Krishna understood, if anyone else tells him, he won't believe it. But if Yudhisthira tells him, he has to believe it, because Yudhisthira has such integrity. We should all strive to have that type of integrity in our lives. Srila Prabhupada had that integrity. When he told anything he told us, there was no question, it's true. Whether we understand it or not, it must be true, because he only speaks the truth. That is a very, very important part. From the new bhakta to the leaders of our mission, we should all strive to have that respect and integrity in the hearts of others. That means we have to be very honest and very pure. So anyways, Drona just decided, I'm not going to fight anymore. This is too much. Bhima's insulted me. My son is dead. This is too much. So he just gave up his bow and arrow, and he went back to his Brahmin Leela. And he just sat on his chariot and fixed himself in samadhi. And then just Drona came charging at him with his sword. And everyone was trying, just Drona, what are you doing? He's meditating. He's not even fighting anymore. And just Drona ran up and chopped his head off. Hare Krishna. And people, even the Pandavas, were thinking. He said, I had to do it. I took birth to kill Drona. It's a long story. But Maharaj Drupada was once defeated by Drona and insulted by Drona. So Drupada did a yajna, and in that yajna he wanted to have a child that would kill Dronacharya and a daughter that would marry Arjuna. So Drishtadyumna and Arjuna were. Anyways, Ashwatthama, when he heard what had happened, he was terribly angry. So he killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. He killed Drishtadyumna, but he was not satisfied. There was one remaining, surviving Pandava in the womb of Uttara that had to be destroyed. So he sent this Brahmastra weapon into the womb to kill Maharaj Pariksha. And Uttara, she was a helpless woman. She cried out to Krishna to save her child. And when a great devotee cries out for your protection, Krishna must respond. Hearing the cry of Uttara and knowing the glory of this child, Krishna expanded himself to appear right within the womb of Uttara. And it is explained in this particular chapter, a very interesting detail, that the Brahmastra actually burned the ashes, burnt the body of Parikshit. But the soul was still there watching everything. And then Krishna protected the child by giving it a new body. And Maharaj Parikshit, the child, was watching the whole thing. He could actually see it. The soul in the subtle body was there, and he was seeing Krishna doing this wonderful lila of protection. And upon seeing the beauty of Krishna, he became completely attached to Krishna in the womb of his mother. Just like Arjuna, Prahlad Maharaj, simply by hearing the glories of Krishna from Narada Muni, while he was an embryo in the womb, just that sound vibration awakened his love for Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit, in the same situation as Prahlad in the womb, just by seeing Krishna for that moment, he became so much attracted to Krishna. He was named Parikshit because after coming out of the womb, he was always searching, looking, examining, and observing everything, trying to find Krishna. As ye seek, so shall ye find. If you're looking for Krishna, you'll find Krishna. Whatever you look for in this world, Krishna will reveal himself accordingly. So Krishna protected Parikshit Maharaj in this most wonderful way. Why is it that Krishna protected Parikshit Maharaj, but he didn't protect Abhimanyu? It would have been an easier task for Krishna to empower Abhimanyu to defend himself against all the Kurus than to go into the womb and restore the body of a baby. Of course, for Krishna, nothing is difficult or easy. But Srila Prabhupada sometimes says like that. He said during the Second World War, he said, the ladies who were the wives of the soldiers of the German army, they were praying, our husband has gone to the battlefield. Oh God, send him back alive. And then the British soldiers and the Allied forces, their wives would go to church and say, oh God, please bring our husbands back alive. The Prabhupada said, what is Krishna supposed to do? He didn't start the war. These crazy people started the war. They're all disobeying his instructions. And then you want him to save everyone? Prabhupada explained on another occasion that the thief is praying to God, give me the power to steal this man's wealth. And the man is praying to God, Krishna, please protect my wealth. So they're both praying to God. Prabhupada said, God becomes confused. What am I supposed to do? Why are they asking all these contrary prayers of me? But that's Prabhupada's sense of humor, of course. So Krishna can do anything at any time. When Krishna went to Mithila, Bahulasva said, Krishna, come to my house. And Shrutadeva said, Krishna, come to my house. So Krishna said, all right. So he expanded himself in two and went to both houses. Krishna has a chinta shakti. He can do anything at any time for anyone. What do we have to fear? We have Krishna. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. He promises to protect his devotee. What fear should we have if we're honestly and earnestly trying to serve our Guru Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada? So the question may be, Krishna is always protecting the Pandavas and he protected Parikshit. Why not Abhimanyu? Actually, he did protect Abhimanyu. Because protection doesn't just mean the body. Abhimanyu, in giving his life, became celebrated and famous throughout history. Abhimanyu's mission was to serve Krishna. And by showing this incredible example of how he was willing to go in and give his life in this, as the servant of the servant of the Lord, he is celebrated for all of eternity through this act. And therefore, through hearing of this example, it gives so much strength and so much direction to all of us of how we should be. So in dying, he performed a greater service than in living. And he was only living to serve. So therefore, Krishna actually protected him in two ways. One, he sent his soul back home, back to Godhead. And two, is he gave Abhimanyu the service of being historically always remembered and worshipped by the Vaishnavas and by all sincere souls. But Parikshit, he wanted to be king. So Krishna had a different service for Abhimanyu, and he had a different service for Parikshit. And he arranged it perfectly so that they could both be glorified forever by performing their service. And they would both go back home, back to Godhead. So did Krishna protect Abhimanyu as much as he protected Parikshit? In the higher sense, yes. So whether we live or die in our devotional service, we should know Krishna will protect us if we are sincere. Krishna's protection, he promised, is not simply for the duration of this physical body. But if we're sincere, he will protect our service, he will protect our devotion, he will protect the path back home, back to Godhead. And if we can best serve him by staying in this body, then he'll protect our body too. If we can best serve him by giving up this body, then he'll protect us on another level. But Krishna will always protect his devotee. And this is the faith that we should all inspire each other to develop in our lives through the association of devotees in very honest, loving mood of service to each other and through the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Dhananjay Prabhu, please speak something to neutralize the effects of all the time that I have disturbed the minds of all of these great souls. Please give him a microphone.
Actually, it's very difficult for me to add to anything you've said, Maharaj, because you've explained this verse, this very important verse of this third chapter of the third canto, so precisely and so succinctly. Actually, it's interesting about truth, because the motto of the government of India is Satyam Eva Vijayate. That's actually the motto of the Indian government, Satyam Eva Vijayate. And they translated it as, truth shall prevail. This is their motto, truth shall prevail. It's also on the 100-rupee note.
That means they're predicting that Lord Chaitanya's movement will take over India.
They're also predicting everything that Prabhupada has said. Because there's so many things that still have to come to pass. Prabhupada gave so many instructions. He gave so many ideas how to push forward this movement. So it's simply, actually it's a fact, the government of India has given the stamp of approval to Srila Prabhupada's transcendental mission.
It's on every 100 rupee note. Yes? Very well.
But it is a fact that the only way that our society can increase in spiritual strength is on the basis of love and trust. There's actually no other way. And Srila Prabhupada always emphasized, he said, no matter what may happen in the future, never leave ISKCON. And he said it many times. He said it in the West and he also said it here in India. Because ISKCON is none different from Srila Prabhupada. Because ISKCON is the vessel or the vehicle that is carrying Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And this mercy is incredibly special. Because actually we're all taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's mercy by taking shelter in ISKCON. That kripa is incredibly special. And Srila Prabhupada was an ocean of mercy, an unlimited ocean of mercy. So there's plenty of room for everyone to bathe in this ocean of mercy. The entire universe, the inhabitants of all the planets, they can all benefit from this unlimited mercy. What to speak of the inhabitants of this insignificant planet? It's just that there are still so many fallen conditioned souls that have not yet realized this and have not yet met Srila Prabhupada's representatives, the devotees of ISKCON. Because actually every single one of us, we're all representing or reflecting the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who chants Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, even once, with a little sincerity, is a fit candidate for receiving this mercy and for entering into this unlimited ocean of mercy and bathing in its purity. Srila Prabhupada said that the key to the kingdom of God is purity. They don't allow anyone with any impurities to enter. So all impurities have to be removed from within the heart. Just like Maharaj Parikshit. Actually, in one sense, because of Lord Krishna appearing within the womb of Uttara and burning off that material body, Parikshit was in an absolutely, totally pure form. And so then he could actually appreciate, because he was just, there was nothing left, there was nothing material left. It's just, you know, his spiritual form was there. And he was able to have darshan and associate so intimately with the Lord. Can you imagine? Intimately associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. within the womb of his mother. Generally speaking, the womb is not a very nice place. Not only is the living entity restricted because he doesn't have the facility for moving freely around, but also it's a very dirty place. Because not only is the living entity residing within the womb, there is also a worm which is also living there. There are so many other nasty living entities that are residing within the fluid, the amniotic, as they call it, the amniotic fluid, is that right? Is that the proper medical terminology? Amniotic fluid, whatever that means. What does amniotic mean? Anyone can explain? Any gynecologists, doctors here? Anyway, whatever is that fluid that is giving life and also acting as a cushion. Actually, the supply is coming through the umbilical cord from via the placenta. Anyway, these things are there, but they're not very pleasant things. And there's also other living entities residing there. So for the Lord to decide to appear within this very unique situation meant that by protecting the living entity, this living entity to have darshan must be in a total 100% pure consciousness and also pure form. Because in Vaikuntha Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, there are no dirty things. Actually, dirt is not allowed to enter. There are no cockroaches. There are no mosquitoes. There are no flies.
Prabhupada said even if they were, they would all be chanting and dancing.
There's no stool. There's no urine.
But even
there's no mucus.
Even if there was, it would smell very sweet.
There is no blood. There are no hogs. There are absolutely no question of anything impure. So in the same way, we have to kick out impurities totally from ISKCON and remain transcendentally pure in mind, in body, in actions, in speech. Can you imagine the potency? Can you imagine the attractiveness? Because the denizens of the spiritual world are the most attractive beings. Jai Shri Shri Rama, Ki Jai, Shri Shri Goni Thai Ki Jai. So by being pure inwardly, outwardly, then we can all become Vaikuntha men and Vaikuntha ladies. And just imagine the potency. And very, very quickly, all those living entities, all those conditioned souls will become overwhelmed by the purity, by the sincerity, and they'll be forced to surrender themselves. This is the key to converting the entire world to Krishna consciousness. What do you think, Maharaj?
I think that Srila Prabhupada is mercifully speaking through you. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.
Hare Krishna.